Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. The media is full of messages about what to eat. Sometimes it seems like experts are sharing conflicting information about which foods are the right foods to eat. Do you ever find it hard to figure out what to feed yourself? Do you have a hard time deciding fact from fiction when it comes to nutritional advice? Is returning to what our ancestors ate a solution? That's our conversation today. We're back right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native American individuals cannot sue when losing access to public land. Only tribes can, according to a recent federal court ruling in Michigan. Michigan's Department of Natural Resources is in the process of selling over 2,000 acres of public land to a mining company. Morgan Springer with Interlochen and Public Radio has more.
When the land sale goes through, Native Americans in the region won't be able to hunt, fish, or harvest plants on land they've been using for centuries. Phil Belfi is among six individuals that sued the state when the land sale was announced.
So that's my personal take on all of this. I was trying to get the court to agree that individual Native people have rights in that territory. And the judge said no.
But that didn't sit well with Belfi.
Those rights belong to us as Native people, period, whether we're tribal members or not.
Belfi is a citizen of the White Earth Nation located in Minnesota. He's lived in northern Michigan for years and harvested resources on public lands. But an 1800s treaty gave limited rights to northern Michigan tribes. Belfi says he took on the lawsuit because he wasn't confident tribes in the region would. Aaron Payment is chairperson for the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and Chippewa Ottawa Resource Authority. He says they have not yet decided to litigate, but are not ruling it out.
Because what we are seeing is a encroachment of these types of private developments that are coming to Michigan that threaten to diminish our ceded territory.
Ed Golder with Michigan's Department of Natural Resources sees things differently. Golder says after many consultations with tribes, the DNR made major changes to the sale agreement. One thing they did was reduce the parcel from roughly 10,000 to 2,000 acres. Both Payman and Golder say the land sale not only affects Native Americans' access to land, but other hunters and people looking to recreate in the area as well. For National Native News, I'm Morgan Springer.
A water walk on the Navajo Nation is planned Saturday to raise awareness of the San Juan River. Contamination flowed down the river after the Gold King Mine waste spill in August, which impacted tribes, including the Navajo Nation. Water walk organizer Charlie Servier says she's connected to the water and wanted to take action after seeing how the spill hurt people.
I was raised around it. I grew up around it. I felt like it was more family to me than anything, so I couldn't take it anymore. I saw so many posts, especially our elders. It just broke my heart. I've cried over some of the pictures that I've seen.
The walk will begin in the community of Hogback and end in Shiprock, New Mexico. Servier says the walk is for all tribes and all people to call attention to protecting the earth and natural resources, especially water.
We all need to stand up and become united. You know, we all need to become one. We've done that so many times, and it's there. It's proof. It's written in history. In these history books, it's written. We've done great things as Native, you know, as Natives. We have stood up. We have been heard. So why not do it again?
Organizer Kenny Frost agrees that more awareness needs to happen.
We have utilized the water in the best manner that we have, and even our ancestors prior to this have taught us never take advantage of water, always treat it as being sacred. And that's one of the most important things, and that's one of the things that we want to convey, and we want to educate the non-Native people that when this happens to you, you got to treat it with respect. Otherwise, it's going to be taken away and we'll never be able to use it.
Frost recently held a ceremony on the Animas River in Colorado, which was also impacted by the Gold King Mine waste spill. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
KNBA and Recover Alaska are seeking inspiring stories of recovery from alcohol addiction. If you or someone you know would like to share a story of recovery as part of an upcoming online and on-air documentary video project, go to knba.org and click Tell Your Story.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Feeding ourselves is a basic function of life. Many of us want to eat good-tasting food that fills us up and fuels our day. Eating a healthy and balanced diet might seem like a simple task, yet every day we hear messages in the media about the kinds of foods we should and shouldn't eat. Have you ever been online and you saw something posted that said five foods you should never eat? Or what about a new claim of a miracle food that everyone should be eating? Here's a few of those messages, both old and new, together.
Did you know that Americans go on about 10 different diets in their lifetime? You'd think with all that dieting, we'd be the slimmest and trimmest.
Millions of people all over America are saying 1048, the password for losing up to 10 pounds in 48 hours.
Dieters, welcome back to eating. Today, there's a new way to diet. The Edward Dalton Company introduces Good Measure, the world's first 300-calorie diet dinners. Now you can actually eat full meals like meat, potatoes, gravy, twice a day.
Plus shockingly good food that's affordable, six times a day. You'll feel the difference on day one.
Well, chocolate is something that actually in its rawest form, cacao, that bean, is really very healthy and has high antioxidants. It really helps our body be well.
This package includes the Wonder 10-Day Diet that lets you eat three delicious meals a day, plus a bedtime snack, and even includes a jog for your willpower.
You are listening to Native America Calling, and we just heard some clips from different diet and food commercials, food advice. I'll admit that sometimes I feel very overwhelmed with all of these messages, and some of them are conflicting and end up just sort of bouncing around in my head. Where can we go for good, sound nutritional advice? Have you ever tried one of the popular diets like the grapefruit diet or even the paleo diet? Or have you decided that you're going back to eating what your ancestors ate? What to eat is our conversation today. We'll be taking your questions about nutrition as well as your advice on what you think we should be eating. The number to call in and participate is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Durango, Colorado, is Kim Heintzman. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist, a certified diabetes educator, and an adjunct professor at the University of Maryland. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Kim.
Thank you, Monica. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. So, Kim, you know, I'll admit that there have been times I've been in the grocery store, I'm trying to get food for the week, I'm looking around and I just feel overwhelmed because I can hear these sort of media messages coming at me. So I'm standing in the bread aisle and I'm hearing, you know, something that I heard about, like, never eat bread. Bread is the worst for you. And but then I go somewhere else and I'm looking to see if it has specific ingredients we were not supposed to eat. And sometimes I end up just kind of leaving and thinking to myself, I have no idea what I'm going to eat. This is ridiculous. What advice do you have for people who are sort of going through the motions of trying to figure out, what do I feed myself?
Oh, I know, and it's overwhelming. First and foremost, I always tell my patients, food is meant to be enjoyed with people you love. And so that's our first thing. It nourishes our bodies as well as our souls to enjoy food. The other thing we try to focus on is what we can eat versus what we can't eat, because so many times it's like, don't eat this, and it's so negative, and it can be overwhelming. So we try to, when we do our grocery store tours or education, we try to focus on foods that we can eat and incorporate. And so that's where we start. I know whenever people are, you know, maybe starting a diet, if something is too restrictive or too expensive, it is hard to maintain long term. And so when we're trying to institute healthy eating, we try to do small baby steps that can, you know, that we can sustain over time. And unless there's a clinical reason to restrict a food, you really don't need to do it unless you have a spiritual reason or a health reason for doing it.
Well, but we are talking about what to eat today. Specifically, when you make a decision, if you want to eat healthier, how do you go about making that decision? How do you go about choosing what to eat? Have you ever tried any strange diets? Give us a call and tell us about it. We want to hear from you. You can call in anonymously, of course. And it's the no judgment zone today. Everyone's opinion is welcome. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Have you ever struggled to figure out what to eat? We want to hear from you. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Kim, let's talk about some of these diets that that we've heard about. Wombly on Twitter sent us a tweet and said that he tried the baby food diet.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's up with this diet?
That's one of the funnier ones. What this does is it really reduces portion size. And many of us eat good food, but we eat too much of good food. So this baby food diet, it just has very small portions and therefore decreases the calories that you eat. And so that's how it achieves weight loss. But again, you may find yourself feeling hungry and chasing that hunger throughout the day, and you may not be able to keep that going long term.
And I mean, is there, you know, we feed babies baby food, so there must be some kind of nutritional value to eating baby food.
Yes, yes. It's just normal food that we eat that doesn't have a lot of sodium or added seasonings, and then it's been pureed so that the texture is appropriate for babies so that they don't choke because they don't have all of their teeth. And so, yes, it's nutritionally sound, and we can eat those same foods, but we can prepare them ourselves rather than having them pureed or modified in the texture at all. And so, yes.
Well, you know, one of the other diets that I heard of was the blood type diet. And this is a diet based on your blood type. You're supposed to, if you're a certain blood type, then you're supposed to eat certain foods. What do you know about this diet?
Well, the blood type diet, it avoids a lot of simple carbohydrates, which would be a lot of highly processed foods, white flour, white rice, you know, a lot of, you know, processed foods that really are not that good for us. So that's a good part about it. Probably the downside on it, again, it's what I mentioned before, where it's very restrictive, and those can be hard to maintain long term.
Is there any science behind the idea that our blood types require us to eat different foods?
Not really. It's really not based on sound science. And many of these diets are a pseudoscience, or they really have not been peer-reviewed or tested in large populations. I know it's kind of funny. My daughter sent me a link on the butter coffee diet, which is, I guess, all the rage in Southern California. And it's this gentleman who has this kind of enriched coffee drink that you have in the morning, and it replaces breakfast, and it's supposed to fuel you throughout the day, and it worked for him. And so this is another little principle that many times these diets are found on success for one person or a very small group of people, but it doesn't really translate to the entire population. And so that's another thing is if it works for you and you feel better and you have more energy, and as long as your doctor or healthcare provider does not caution you against going on it. It's okay to try some of these short term, but again, if they're very expensive or very restrictive, it's hard to maintain for a long period of time.
We are talking about what to eat today, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Have you tried one of these diets? We want to hear about it. Give us a call. Kim Heintzman is with us. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist and a certified diabetes educator. She's also was formerly with the Shining Mountain Diabetes Program on the Southern Ute Tribe. And phone lines are open for your questions about diets. We definitely want to hear from you. Kim, what is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian?
Okay. Well, a registered dietitian has achieved a certain level of credentialing where we have a four-year college degree. We've studied biochemistry, anatomy and physiology, food science, and health, and we have to maintain our credentials by getting continuing education documented every year. And recently, registered dietitians added nutritionist to our title so that people realize we also do nutrition. We're not just clinical dietetics. We do the whole body, you know, body, mind, spirit, and, you know, whole body health. But registered dietitians are the only ones that can provide medical nutrition therapy. And so if somebody just has a nutritionist title, you may want to ask them, where did they get their training? And just find out a little bit more, because it is an unregulated title. And so anybody can really call themselves a nutritionist.
We're talking about what to eat today. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-996-2848. Have you ever tried any special diets that involved maybe a singular food, like just eating grapefruit, or maybe the all kale diet? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Jenny in Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Jenny, what would you like to share about diets today?
Hi, I have a three-year-old child now who is type 1 diabetic, and we are doing the raw diet, and that is a struggle, not just on my side as a parent, but as my child. He does see the advertisement and characters on food, and, you know, he wants that stuff, and we're trying to also teach him that, you know, sugars are very harmful to him, but some sugars are good. It's a balance that it's hard to teach a three-year-old, but the raw diet is what we're trying, and it's been a big struggle.
Jenny, how did you come to the conclusion that the raw diet was the best for your son?
Well, we were talking with the acupuncturist and the chiropractor, and he said, why don't you try, between both of them, they said, why don't you guys try, you know, incorporating more, instead of cooking their vegetables, why don't you try eating them raw? And then eating more sprouted nuts and seeds. And so it was just a whole work of his medical team and, you know, also us, his parents.
Jenny, thanks so much for giving us a call from Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Kim, Jenny brought up two really interesting points. One, that she's trying to incorporate raw food into her diet and her son's diet, but also that how difficult that is because her son sees so many commercials for different kinds of food. We don't see a lot of advertisement for asparagus or apples or things like that.
Okay, and Jenny, my hat's off to you. I know it is a lot of work to parent a young child with type 1 diabetes. I've worked with young type 1s, and it is a lot of work, so I commend you on that effort. Probably my biggest point is feeding a toddler is hard enough without having a medical condition, and for those out there who don't know, type 1 diabetes is different than type 2 diabetes because it's an autoimmune disease that requires multiple blood sugar checks a day and multiple injections of insulin a day to keep them alive and to keep them safe. And so feeding a toddler is tough enough when you have the struggle of, oh my gosh, they're going to have a low blood sugar or something like that to worry about. I think what I would recommend is working with your whole team, and that would include your pediatric endocrinologist and the diabetes educator and dietitian, to work with your child while he's growing and, you know, growing both intellectually and physically. Now, one thing, little kids are pickier eaters than adults because they have a very acute sense of smell and their taste buds are more accurate. And they're also very sensitive to texture. And so I think just introducing one new food at a time every couple days, I wouldn't do a new one every day. I would do like a new one once or twice a week in a very positive environment. And if he's overtired or over, you know, like if he's been playing too much, it may be tough to get him to accept it. And it usually takes introducing a new food up to 15 times to get a kid to accept it and like it. And if they spit it out, just don't make it a battle. As far as the raw versus cooked, I think, you know, whatever works best for your family, although do watch choking hazards because, like, raw carrots, sometimes kids, if they're too busy, they're not going to chew them thoroughly. And so sometimes having them cooked is better because it's not a choking hazard. So I would look at that as well. But I think just introducing the foods when he's relaxed and happy, you might have a little more success. And as far as the bombardment with media, I get as frustrated with you. It's the big companies have the advertising budget, and many times the foods that they advertise are not good for us or our families. So I hope that answered your question, but I think just pacing yourself with introducing the new foods might help.
Thanks for that, Kim. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Cameron in Cortez, Colorado. Cameron, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you. I have noticed this thread about more restrictive diets being harder to keep, and I found that myself quite a while ago. I tried proper food combining, and this was made famous, I think, in a book by Harvey and Mary Diamond, but the idea that you can't mix in a meal proteins and carbohydrates. There's an extra added thing about fruit that you never eat that with anything else. You always have it first at your meal. Do you have any opinions about proper food combining and if there's any scientific basis for it? Thanks very much.
Thanks, Cameron. Kim?
Thanks, Cameron. That is a great question. I actually get that a lot. Now, certain religions do practice food combinations or lack thereof, and so sometimes those are based in spiritual beliefs. So apparently that is individualized to somebody's beliefs, and I encourage you to follow what you believe in that sense. As far as science, I know as a diabetes educator, we encourage people to have mixed meals because they need the quick energy from carbohydrates, which would be whole grains or fruit or starchy vegetables, with their protein and fat. And so each meal does have to be mixed, so it provides quick energy and then sustained energy and to keep people from getting hungry. For someone who has diabetes, if they're having a low blood sugar, they'll want to have a quick energy food, but then they need to have a mixed meal after that to keep their blood sugar from dropping again. But for somebody who does not have diabetes that has to worry about blood sugar maintenance, having fruit alone is fine and doing that. But as far as scientific, no, it's not backed by science.
All right, Cameron, thanks so much for giving us a call. Let's go to the phone lines again. We've got Rachel in Albuquerque. Hey there, Rachel, do you have a question?
I do have a question. My question is about eating locally. And I know a lot of people say we should eat locally. I live in Albuquerque, so it's a desert, not a lot of fish, not a lot of omegas that are easily available here. And also thinking about folks in Alaska who might not have access to a lot of fresh vegetables. Should we pay attention to eating locally? Does that matter?
That's a great question, Rachel. Kim?
Oh, I think thank you, Rachel. I think from a sustainability standpoint and taking care of our earth, I think it's very important to eat locally as often as possible. But I think sometimes we need to eat foods that may be from somebody else, somewhere else, especially like fish or game or fresh fruits and vegetables. 100 years ago, we had to preserve food. So we dried it. Salt was used to preserve things. Smoking foods, canning, things like that were used to preserve food. And so I think if you can do that at home, of course, it's better. But sometimes we do need to eat food that is from somewhere else. But I like to encourage our local community gardens and food programs and eat locally whenever we can. I think it's a good thing.
We are talking about what to eat today, what's healthy. Let's squeeze in one more call before the break. We've got Sharon in Idaho tuned in on KISU. Sharon, what's your question?
I was wondering what your guest take is on artificial sweeteners. I really try to avoid those.
Kim?
Oh, great question. And thank you so much for asking that. I am not a big proponent of artificial sweeteners. I think if we can kind of set our taste buds to more savory when possible, that's good. Oh, sorry about that, my dog.
Your dogs don't like artificial sweeteners either.
So we're not craving sweets. I think that's better. But very small amounts of sweets are okay, but try to get them from fruit and try to use our taste buds just to have fruit as a sweetener.
All right, Sharon, thanks so much for giving us a call from Idaho. Tuned in on KISU. We are talking with Kim Heintzman today. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist, a certified diabetes educator, and an adjunct professor at the University of Maryland. We want to hear from you. Do you have questions about what to eat, special diets, things like that? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're about to go to a break, but after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about traditional diets. So if you have decided that the food that you are eating is, you want to change it, you want to eat healthier, but also really think about what our ancestors ate. We want to hear from you about that as well. Have you decided to switch to a traditional diet? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Kim, we got about a minute right before the break. Your thoughts on traditional diets?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. I'm a big proponent of traditional diets, and I try to, when I was with the Southern Ute Tribe, I tried to encourage my patients to return to what their grandparents and great-grandparents were eating. Even if it's hard and you can't do it every day, try to do it as often as possible, and I think our next speaker will be expanding on that, but I think traditional diets are really the best way to go.
Well, today our topic is what to eat. Have you ever found yourself in the middle of the grocery store and you're thinking to yourself, I want to eat right, but I have no idea what is okay to eat? Have you ever felt frustrated because you feel like you're getting conflicting information from the media about what to eat? And I also want to hear from you. Have you decided, you know what, I'm going to go talk to the elders of my tribe and try and figure out a diet for myself based on what our ancestors used to eat? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we're also on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Monica Brain, senior producer for Native America Calling. On our next program, we'll feature the voices of several inspirational Native youth who took the nation's capital by storm this summer with their leadership skills and vision for the future of our Native nations. Join us for this special pre-recorded edition of our electronic talking circle.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Thanks for choosing to spend part of your day with us. Native America Calling is on many stations across the U.S. If you have topics that you think we should be covering, send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. On our website, you can sign up for our newsletter, make comments, or visit our show archive. We also podcast our show on iTunes, Stitcher, PodCruncher, and SoundCloud. We're talking about diets today. Do you find it hard to figure out what to eat? Or have you figured it out? Give us a call and tell us what you eat. Do you find it difficult to find good nutritional advice? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Kim Heintzman is with us. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist, a certified diabetes educator, and a professor at the University of Maryland. And I want to add one more voice to our conversation. Joining us now from Phoenix, Arizona is Evelina Maho. She is a community health and wellness division director at Native Health, and she is Navajo. Welcome, Evelina.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on. And I wanted to first ask you a little bit about some of the media messages that we hear. You know, do you ever find that the information that's being given out is confusing, particularly when we think about trying to go back to our traditional diets and we're getting conflicting information from the media?
I think the media has a huge impact on the way we view, our perspectives today versus how it used to be back in the day for many of the American Indian tribes and Alaskan Natives. It impacts, you know, our decision to purchase things at the grocery store. If for those that may live in rural parts of the country, it also, you know, nowadays we have immediate access even through media influences through internet, through our cell phones, and it really truly impacts our individual family and community decisions onto what to purchase once we enter a grocery store or a convenience store or a gas station. Truly it does, and it also begins to affect the way we, our social, I guess, networks within our family and that decision after what we decide to bring into our home. So, yes, it does. And it also begins to challenge individuals as well because you have conflicting information coming from media, commercials, the different kinds and types of bad diets out there. You have your providers, you have then in your own home, you have your aunties, your uncles, your grandmothers, you have your friends and your social network that also impact your decision.
Well, we're talking about food today, what to eat. Have you decided, have you gone on a healthy eating plan? And call us and tell us about it. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Susan, who's in Washington, D.C., tuned in online. Susan, you have a question for us.
Yes, thank you. My mom was a smoker for a long time, and then she finally quit. And then after she quit, she gained like 30 pounds. And I know it's been really, really tough for her. And we were watching that documentary, My Big Fat Diet, where a group of people from Canada, First Nations group, go on a traditional diet. And so this doctor, you know, says that they should eat salmon and ulican grease and like a lot of greens and very much about anti-pasta, rice, potatoes, and starch and sugars. And she was really excited about it. But to me, I just think that it's hard to maintain that. It's like both of us have full-time jobs, and we can't, I can't bring like a huge duffel bag of food to my work every day and just like eat it. So that's why it's just really easy just to like bring like a sandwich or something like that. So I was wondering people's feelings on the struggles with, you know, the practicality of going to a traditional or so-called traditional diet.
Thanks for that, Susan. Evelina, what about the practicalities of traditional diets?
Well, I think that we have to be able to first immediately assess what resources we have, what kind of support we have, your access to, you know, clinical recommendations. If there's definitely an ailment, a chronic health condition involved, we definitely want to make sure that there's an RD there, medical providers, and that aspect of it. But you may want to consider, and if you do consider, that cultural, you know, addition to the diet, that's really important too, especially for our elders, even for our young folks today who wish to do so. But I think a combination of both approaches is really important in today's time. So, again, number one, I would really look at what are your local resources? Who can support me in addition to myself to make this happen and make it realistic? I know I and many other dietitians and nutritionists and healthcare providers and in the healthcare industry, we encourage adopting and incorporating American Indian traditional diets, but it also takes a lot of work, and we understand that. But incorporating some piece and some parts of it, that would be important to do.
I also think that there's something to be said for when you say traditional diet, you're meaning the community that you come from. And our diets are very different across our communities. I come from the plains and we ate a lot of buffalo, but folks on the North Pacific coast, salmon is the major staple of their food. And so it's you know, challenging to just say traditional diet without really sort of drilling down to, well, what did my community eat? And particularly if you are not living in the area where your community is from. We are talking about diets today, and we definitely want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to Peter in Hooper Bay, Alaska. It's tuned in on KCUK. Peter, you have a comment for us about traditional diets.
Yes, I do. And our traditional diet out here in Hooper Bay, Alaska, we get it once a year. It's like fish and greens and berries and moose meat. So that's like our main tradition diet that we try to get some once a year for the winter so we could have enough to stock for the winter. So that's one thing our main diet out here is, that we gather from the land instead of from the store. So that's one thing I would like to comment. That's about it.
All right, Peter, thanks so much for giving us a call. Let's go to Ray in Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Ray, what would you like to share with us today?
Hi, yes, I'm Zuni Laguna, and I am a fitness trainer, and thank you so much for your topic today. I get a lot of questions about nutrition regarding the people that I exercise with, and they always want to know, how do they get started? How do they eat more healthy? What can they do? They don't know where to turn. So I always tell them three things. I always tell them, first, find out what it is you want to change. Do you want to change your weight? Do you want to change your health? Did the doctor tell you to do something different? Are you on meds that you want to get off of? And then two, I recommend that they do a 30-day diary, just eat normally, make four columns with the time, what they ate, how it made them feel, and really how they slept that day, what time they got up and what time they went to bed and what time they got up, because that's really important to see what you're doing now so that you can change it. And then
the last point I want to make is that quit looking at it as diet. Start making a change in your life to eat healthy and don't call it diets anymore.
Ray, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Kim, what do you think about what Ray shared about these steps to beginning to changing the way you eat?
Well, and that's what, thank you for the input. That's what we talked about, being able to sustain something long term. And I do like to approach it from healthy eating and nourishing, you know, body, mind, spirit, as not just as a diet. When we have a health condition that requires special diets, then, you know, we can refer to them that way. But I think for every day, looking at as a way to nourish our bodies, that is a very healthy way to look at it.
Let's go to Don in Peralta, New Mexico. Don, what would you like to share?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you. But I listened to the information that somebody had asked for, artificial sweeteners. And being diabetic, I wanted to let you know that the one thing that wasn't mentioned was a product that's natural. It's called stevia, and it can be raised. I do that, and it's really, really good for you. It does not raise your blood sugar. It's really healthy for you. It's all natural, and you can grow it every year if you know how. And I really suggest that's something for diabetics. The other thing, for people that are not diabetics, I would recommend honey that they either grow or they buy locally, because it's a very, very nutritious food.
All right, Don, thanks for giving us a call from Peralta, New Mexico. Kim, thoughts on stevia?
Okay, the commercial stevia products that are found in beverages or trademark Truvia, it is still processed, but it is from the stevia plant. And I'm in awe. If he can grow it and use himself, I think that's great. And that's definitely the best way to do it. And again, using honey if you don't have diabetes or have to worry about your blood sugars, I think that's okay in small amounts. One thing I like to look at from an anthropology standpoint or a historical standpoint is we take in so much more sugar than people did 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or 200 years ago. And those extra sugar calories are stored in our liver, and we see liver damage in kids because they take in too much sugar. And so that's why usually where we start with patients is to sort of reset their taste buds so that they're not craving those sweets all the time, so that they have a more what we call savory diet. But I think when you do have sweet products, getting it from a natural source is much better, but also small amounts.
Evelina Maho is with us, and she is from Native Health. You know, Evelina, Don was telling us that he grows his own stevia, and he uses that to sweeten products. And I know that you have a community garden at Native Health. Talk to us a little bit about the foods that you grow in the garden and how that community garden helps towards discussions about nutrition and what to eat.
Well, first off, I just want to make a couple of comments. For one thing is that every American Indian, Alaska Native tribe, indigenous peoples, they have a story of food. It has a name. They have songs, prayers. And so it's always, when we're talking about diet, I like the young lady's comment from Zuni Laguna in you know, noting and speaking to the word diet from really a holistic approach, a community approach, American Indian approach. We should try to take away the word diet and view food as an important element, an essential element, a basic fundamental element that requires us for us to survive, to be able to think, to move, to do what we need to do every single day. And so when you approach food, we then begin to appreciate food. And so in a lot of these tribes, indigenous peoples, there's always a story of where food came, where it evolved. And it's usually embedded in our creation stories. And so we're then told by our spiritual guidance, our leaders, and so forth,
that we have to protect these things, and there's a specific name, there's a specific time to prepare, to store, to use in ceremonies and that sort of thing. When we begin to do that, we then begin to exercise our own version, our traditional version of public health intervention, prevention of chronic diseases and health ailments. So I wanted to just comment on that. So that's really the driving force and one of the rationales and thoughts behind our community garden here at Phoenix. We have many, many tribes that come from different parts of the country who either go to school, reside here to work. Some folks have relocated here many, many years ago because Phoenix Indian School was here and they've decided to make this their new home. We've taken the opportunity through partnership with the City of Phoenix, the Mayor's Office, Keep Phoenix Beautiful, and Phoenix Renews, two new nonprofit agencies, and our agency to provide land, water, support and resources to really be able to reintroduce, in some cases, some of traditional foods that people can grow in a raised bed. We provide talks, presentations, stories, dances, and songs about food and how we relate that back to our health, nutrition, and sustainability of food. So that's really our primary goal with this community garden.
You know, the first time I ever grew something that I ate myself, I felt like really empowered, like, wow, I grew this and now I'm feeding myself with it. Have you heard from folks in who work in the community garden or who are part of it that doing this is helping them maybe understand different ways to have an eating plan, or maybe that they're actually changing the way that they eat because they grew their own food?
Yes, we have multiple stories about our families, community members, telling us about their experience in planting. Once they plant, maintaining their garden. Once they're, you know, ready for harvesting, we then talk about how to do food preparation. And so, and the neat thing about this whole process is that the family becomes involved. So they're really involved in their children, the young ones getting involved with learning about where food comes from. We've grown things like corn, squash, melons. We've planted, some tribes have planted beans. Some have tried even foods that are foreign to our traditional folks around here. We've planted lettuce, broccoli, asparagus. So these are different kinds of foods that they're learning about as well. And we invite many community members to come in and share their experience with gardening, whether it be a traditional perspective or a new way to you know, harvest and work with corn and come up with dishes, that sort of thing. So, yes, it really has contributed in both promoting and really getting families to be able to cook much more healthier foods.
It sounds like a really great place. Let's take another call. We've got Mike in Genesee, Idaho, tuned in on KIYE. Mike, what would you like to share today?
Well, maybe I could tandem what this young lady just got through sharing about, you know, community gardens and the importance of community gardens and educating. And I guess my message is about the importance of getting young people involved in our lives and our foodstuffs and water and climate change and all these things that are related, as well as the, you know, all of our living foodstuffs that contribute to our culture and lifestyles. You know, we may not be able to access some of our traditional foods such as buffaloes or, you know, or some of the roots or some of the fish that, you know, is indigenous to many tribal people. But what is it in those things that's good for us? And what is it about other foodstuffs that's not good for us, such as sugars and white starchy stuffs that you've traditionally found in commodity foods? But we need to get young people engaged, whether we do it through our educational systems or whether you do it through tribal boys and girls clubs, to learn about these things so they can become our next native scientists and native nutritionists that we need to pass this message. But we've got to get them involved, whether it's through community projects or through family activities, learning how to can these things, all these good things. As I sit here on my back porch and look out at my just completed beautiful garden of corn and our beans that we're harvesting. I mean, other people need to be doing these things, you know, as well. But kids, I think, are really the ticket to our future on knowing these things in our changing world. That's my message.
Mike, thanks so much. Evelina, how can we get kids involved and interested in this, particularly when it comes to our traditional diets?
I think it's a valid point and an important point. You know, we really bring in, one of the things I encourage is to bring in your experts. These are folks in the community. These are family members. These are aunties. These are uncles. These are grandmothers. And so one of the things, for example, we are planning currently to do is talk about corn grinding for our young ladies, talking about how a grinding stone, the bottom piece of it, represents to young Navajo women, for example, that this is the uterus. And when we begin to grind a whole corn kernel, and we actually go through the motion of actually grinding it, it represents birth, it represents life, it represents longevity, it represents reproduction in that whole circle of life. And when we prepare our foods, we should think right. We should pray right. We should speak right and do right and remain healthy. And in that whole process, we're also exercising. You know, a lot of young women will share their stories about, I've done my corn grinding ceremony, and you hear a lot of women say, I was sore for the next couple of days. And it exerts, there's a lot of energy that's involved. It increases your physical activity. You're sharing stories and songs and the important things behind that. And that's what I'm referring to. Those are our public health, I guess, interventions that are embedded into our traditional practices and our stories. It promotes communication, the social structures of our families, and that's really important. And I think if we as adults, we also need to take the lead to support what this gentleman just alluded to, in that we need to ask these questions if we don't know it, and then also be able to incorporate these small pieces of stories, cultural practices, back into the way we deliver healthcare, the way we deliver our services, our programs in our own homes. And so then, thus, it's an individual responsibility. I think it's attainable in small amounts, and we shouldn't be overwhelmed, but be, you know, be a participating body in this whole process and this movement towards a healthier environment for us all. But I do agree, we really must continue. And I think there's a lot of work working with youth throughout the country, doing wonderful projects, community gardens in school settings, with multiple agencies around the countries and organizations and tribes doing this. And I think it's a great movement, and I think it should continue. But really incorporating those stories that belong to specific communities and things like that. Here in Phoenix, we, like I said, we've got multiple tribes that come. And so we take the concept and make a general to try to incorporate that into our program so that everybody's welcome. And that's the other thing about food is that it brings people. It brings together family. It brings together a purpose, and that's important. It's a welcoming type of element that must exist in our people today and continue.
Evelina, thank you so much for sharing with us today. Kim, we're right at the end of the hour. I want to give you a moment. Any final thoughts you'd like to share about what to eat?
Yes, thank you again for having me. And I think all the points that were made today are so important. And I think just asking more questions as what we can do in the future. I just like to close with the message that I try to keep consistent is that food is meant to be enjoyed and shared with people we love. And I think that's the basic message so that it does nourish us on many different levels. So thank you so much for having me. And just everybody go out there and enjoy their food the rest of the day, and hopefully you're surrounded by people that you care about and enjoy.
Evelina, where can folks learn more about Native Health?
You can visit our website at www.nativehealthphoenix.org.
Perfect. We'll put a link to that up on our website as well. And we've reached the end of the hour. Thanks so much to our guests, Kim Heitzman and Evelina Mahoe. Also, thanks to everybody who called in with questions and comments. We really appreciate it. We're back on Monday with a special pre-recorded show about Native American youth. And on Tuesday, we'll be discussing wild rice. So if you liked our conversation about traditional foods, you're going to want to tune in on Tuesday for sure. Visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, to learn more about our upcoming shows. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Blake screened our calls today. I'm senior producer Monica Brain, stepping in for our regular host, Tara Gatewood. Have a great weekend.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov. Support from the nonprofit Herd Museum, presenting a master artist basketry workshop at the Inn of the Mountain Gods in Mescalero, New Mexico, September 17th to 19th. American Indian basketry artists seeking to be mentored by master-level Mescalero artists Matthew and Andrea Suma are invited to apply by September 11th. The workshop is free to accepted applicants. Food, lodging, and travel stipends are provided. Details at herd.org/event.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.